Welcome to SMR's This Week in Review podcast, where we highlight the recent news in sports medicine research. This past week's most popular post on sportsmedres.org discussed a recent study that found that a high compliance with neuromuscular training programs is a key factor in reducing the rate of anterior cruciate ligament injuries. Neuromuscular training has established its role in injury prevention, especially at the knee. It is known that initiation of neuromuscular training at a young age leads to more effective injury prevention. However, other factors, such as compliance, have not had such support in the literature. Therefore, the authors of this study investigated compliance with neuromuscular training programs as another key element in successful knee injury prevention. The authors performed a sub-study of a previously published randomized controls trial which examined the use of neuromuscular training programs for the prevention of acute knee injuries in adolescent female soccer players. The endpoints for these analyses were anterior cruciate ligament injury rate, acute knee injury, and severe knee injury rate, which was defined as an injury that caused more than 4 weeks of absence. The study sample consisted of over 2,400 athletes in the intervention group, and over 2,000 athletes in the control group. The intervention group was further subdivided into low, intermediate, and high compliance groups based on their completion of neuromuscular training sessions per week. Decreasing compliance was observed for the individual player over the course of the season, as well as attendance of practice sessions. Injury rates showed a significant reduction in anterior cruciate ligament injuries between the high compliance and low compliance groups. Findings from this study suggest that compliance is another key limiting factor of neuromuscular training programs in the prevention of knee injuries. One advantage of such warm-up programs is that it can be implemented and monitored by the coaching staff, which in turn can also pose a problem. The coaching staff at times is only interested in short-term success, and may place the potential of significant knee injuries second. Adolescent athletes, or athletes that do not compete on the highest level, may not recognize the importance of warm-up programs, and as a result, may not perform them correctly or at all. The authors provided a feasible solution to maximizing the exposure to neuromuscular training programs by implementing it for every practice, which guarantees that each athlete is exposed to such warm-up programs. In conclusion, the study suggests that compliance is an important factor for a successful neuromuscular training program. However, questions for the durability of neuromuscular training benefits remains. This past week, we also had four other posts on sportsmedres.org. That's res.org. The first post described a study which suggested that the presence of femoral nodes, disc herniation, and playing alignment position significantly increases the risk of disc degeneration. Furthermore, continuing to play football for 2 years seems to be a risk factor for the development of low back pain. The second post described a study that found that injury incidence in soccer increases in the 5-minute period following a potentially game-disruptive incident, such as a red card, yellow card, injury, or goal, compared with other match periods. And the third post described a study that found that preseason deficits in eccentric, internal, and external glenohumeral rotation strength may be risk factors for developing shoulder pain during a volleyball season. Preventative measures, such as eccentric shoulder rotation strengthening, should be considered during preseason and in-season strengthening and conditioning programs. And finally, the fourth post described a study that found that within a 5-year period, collegiate women's soccer players that competed on field turf surfaces suffered less injuries compared with games on natural grass. Don't forget that we also share extra material on social media. For example, this past week, our social media posts included a blog post from the Clinical Journal of Sports Medicine about a decision-based model for return-to-play decisions. So remember to follow us on Twitter, Facebook, Google+, or LinkedIn. We'll be back next week with more sports medicine research. Until then, have a fun one.